Ten Commandment cases, that is, cases involving the posting of the Ten Commandments in some school or other public building, well, they just seem to pop up like weeds all over the United States. And they typically involve the same issues. Typically, they involve something called the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and whether this posting moves us closer to an established church or whether it doesn't. And the outcomes are not always certain because they depend upon the specifics of the case, the context, etc. And that's why they're endlessly fascinating. Well, particularly fascinating to us is the fact that one of those cases happened here, where we produce your weekly constitutional, right near Johnson City, Tennessee, involving a retired airline pilot named Ralph Stewart. It's your weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today it's all about Ralph Stewart versus Moses.
Welcome to your weekly constitutional, hosted by Professor Stuart Harris and produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's historic home, Montpelier.
It's weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today I'm going to talk to you about email. I'm going to talk to you about the fact that we get lots of emails here, and in fact, if you want to send us one, our address is ywc@montpelier.org, and we get a lot of those emails, and we really enjoy getting those emails. Most of them are very friendly. A few of them are a little grumpy with us, but we even appreciate the grumpy ones. One of the friendly ones we got recently was from a listener I've never met. Her name was Vicky Wolf, but Vicky was very nice, and she told us about a story. She had a story idea. We get a lot of those, too, and we appreciate them. This one we decided we had to act on because it involved a man named Ralph Stewart, who is from right near us here in Johnson City, Tennessee. He's actually one county over in a place called Mountain City, Tennessee, which somewhat confusingly is located in a county called Johnson County. But you get the picture. He's not far from here. And Ralph Stewart, it turns out, had been involved in one of those Ten Commandments cases. You know, the ones that seem to pop up all over the nation, kind of like weeds, where somebody gets concerned about a Ten Commandments display in a public building like a courthouse or a school. And then sometimes lawsuits are filed, and typically they involve something called the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And the question is whether these public entities' use of the Ten Commandments somehow moves us toward an establishment of religion. It gets very controversial, and these cases are hard to predict. I mean, the outcome is hard to predict because they're very, very case-specific. The context is always extremely important. Well, the story of Ralph Stewart and his battle with the Johnson County Commission is a fascinating one. Thanks, Vicky, for bringing it to our attention. So we're very lucky to have here with us in the studio the man at the center of the controversy. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Ralph Stewart. I'm retired, living in eastern Tennessee. And we came here not because of any family or any work thing. Is that I have flown over these areas, and this is a beautiful part of the country.
So you were a pilot.
I worked for United Airlines up until my retirement in 1998.
Wow, that's really funny to hear. I was about to say, you ain't from here, are you? And you're not. But this is really cool that you found out about this place, because whenever I fly out of Tri-Cities, and I frequently do, I'm always struck by exactly the same thing. What a beautiful area. You go out over Boone Lake and you see all the mountains and everything. It's just a wonderful place.
Oh, yeah. The Appalachians are just lovely to look at. And I've always liked mountains that are clothed. The Rockies are pretty severe in some places, but the eastern mountains. So when we started looking for a place for retirement, it was between the seashore and the mountains. And we came down here. We found a place to raise llamas.
Llamas?
Well, we had read an article in Smithsonian about llamas, mm-hmm. and my wife and I both like animals. So she read it, and we said, oh, well, investigate. Long story short, we needed to have the proverbial 40-acre farm,
right.
Something so that you could have some livestock. So we started thinking about that and looking at property and things like that. So we discovered where we now live in Johnson County, Tennessee, and we ended up with 150 acres and built a house here starting in 1998, and the house was finished in 99.
Excuse me for saying this, Ralph, but retirement is supposed to be, I thought, about relaxation, and 150 acres and llamas doesn't sound... It sounds like a lot of work to me.
Well, the acres in this part of the world are quite vertical.
Oh, that's true.
That's not a lot of open ground. And also, llamas are a pretty easy-keeping animal. They're pretty nice.
What do you do with them? Do you actually shear the wool and sell it? Is that how you make money?
No, they're basically lawn ornaments.
Big ones.
But my wife does shear them, and she does the whole thing with the fiber.
Uh-huh.
These are not the best fiber llamas. Those are alpacas.
Mm-hmm.
But these llamas do produce hair, and we have to worry more about their overheating than their being too cold in this climate. So she shears them. She cleans the wool. I think the next step is carding. And then it spun, and then she has actually gotten to be pretty good in the fabric world of whatever you do with the fabric after you have the yarn. She knits quite a few different things and whatnot.
Well, that is a remarkable way to retire. But that, of course, is not why we asked you here today. Llamas are fascinating, but this is not the llama show. It's the constitutional show. So why are we talking to you? What did you do after you got here?
At some point in time, I had to go to the courthouse to get a license for a car, vehicle, or something or other. And I noticed the Ten Commandments on a plaque right outside the county clerk's office. They were there, and I remember looking at it and thinking, why are they here? I was not as well informed about things at that time. And I had a question in my mind about it. But having come to a new area, knowing that it's very religious, you tread somewhat lightly. Eventually, I did meet a county commissioner and became a friend with him, and I asked him, how did the Ten Commandments get in the courthouse? And he replied, well, it came before us, and the county court approved it, and so they put them up. And in the ignorance that I had at that time, I thought county court, it sounded legal to me. But it turns out that the county court is a respected term. It's used. There's documents that have it, but that really is the county commissioners. It is no legal status whatsoever. But when he said court, I thought a court had approved of it, and it was only later that I found out that the county, it was just the county commissioners that had voted it in. But by that time, I was well aware that anyone that said anything against religion in Johnson County would probably receive some raft of some mm-hmm. form. And I had spoken to a man that is of a like philosophy of mine or belief system, and he said that he, as a professional, he was retired then, had lost business just because he was not a churchgoer.
Really?
Yes. And so that's going to resonate in the community mm-hmm. as such. I did communicate with the ACLU not too long after that. And they asked if there was anyone else in the community that would stand up for that. And I absolutely knew of no one that would do that because you will have your name on a list, so to speak. So
You should use that term stand up, Ralph, because it's appropriate not just in the generic sense that you're using it, but in a legal sense. We actually have a concept called standing. The Constitution is not self-executing. Someone has to actually stand up and say, I am a person who is personally damaged by something that the government's doing, and I want to go to court and seek redress for my grievance, and here's my constitutional claim. And so without such a person who has standing, who has suffered that individual injury, the case doesn't happen. So you were the one with standing.
Yes, I've become aware of that. You have to have standing to do certain things. In fact, even the legislation, that, if that's what you want to call it, that they used when they made the walls of the county courthouse a public forum, one of the requirements is that to put anything up, you must be a member of or living in Johnson County.
Hmm.
So as such. But that comes much, much later. So I didn't have anyone that I thought we would work together, so I did not do anything about it. Actually, the Bush administration got me more interested in doing it. I felt that there was a rise of religiosity in this country, I hope I pronounced that right, that I had never seen so much in my history. I do not remember going to Auburn, Alabama. I do not remember players praying at the end of the, after a touchdown. And I was in the Marine Corps, and I did not there were some people that went to church or mass or something, but there was not very, just religion was not playing a very major part.
When were you in the Marines, by the way?
Home alive, 65. I got out in 67, I believe. No, 66. I was in there for about 4 years. I graduated from college. I was a commissioned officer, and I went to Pensacola. They taught me how to fly. And
really? You're a Marine pilot?
Yes, sir.
This is perhaps not exactly constitutional, but I find it fascinating. What did you fly?
I was they call it attack pilot back then. A4C Skyhawks.
Oh, my goodness. That's an attack plane.
Yeah.
That's a fighter bomber. And you fly those off of aircraft carriers and bomb people with them, right?
Yeah, that's one of the things.
Did you actually do that?
We got about 3.5 months in Vietnam.
So you're,
but we were land-based. We were not flying off.
Oh, you were land-based. Okay.
Yeah.
And where'd you fly out of? Da Nang?
No, south of there by about 50 miles, a place called Chu Lai.
Oh, my goodness.
They built a whole airport for us there.
So you're a Marine combat veteran. You're a flyer. And you didn't experience a sort of religiosity when you were in the service?
No, the padre just was if you know, no one. It was more of a human resources. Although that term was not but no, there was not a lot of religion in the military when I left there. Mm-hmm. And going through starting a career as an airline pilot, I never saw very much. Not so much. Mm-hmm. During the Bush administration, though. I begin to hear about the effort to fund faith-based
initiatives.
And I thought that was definitely a slippery slope. I cannot see doing that. That is your tax dollars being given to a religious organization, and they generally do not separate their. My guess is they don't separate their religion from what they're doing. So that I noticed. And also, I saw George Bush interviewed at one point where I guess it was a quote from one of his debates. And I believe he was asked the question, who's your favorite philosopher? And he said, Jesus. And I thought to myself, Jesus. that is so contrary. I mean, one, he could be just pandering to the crowd.
Right.
But I always remembered, I remember a quote from, I think it's over 2,000 years old, but about religion, that the masses believe it, the elite know it's not true, but politicians find it useful.
And Zowie, that's a rather pithy statement.
Oh, that's not mine. That's a quote from over 2,000 years, I'm sure, or some form thereof. And also when he had said, teach the controversy. When they were talking about, you know, evolution and the Bible thing down I don't remember where it was in Texas. But he actually, said, well, aren't we supposed to teach your controversy about evolution? And there's absolute, to me, it has way too much evidence to be classified as a controversy. You know, you may not like it, but that's the way it is.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Ralph Stewart of Mountain City, Tennessee, all about his battle over the Ten Commandments. After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, and then we'll continue with Ralph Stewart's story. Stick around. Once again, it's constitutional quiz time, and I know that because I was just sitting here enjoying a peaceful day when all of a sudden he burst into the studio, as he always does. I don't know, I can't really see. Were you wearing your green costume today? Are we going to have a riddle, or are we going to have just a regular quiz today?
It's just a big M, just for Madison.
Just for...
no green today.
Doug Smith is going to be in here, as the quiz guy, and so we're going to have a multiple choice quiz. That's assuming we have a contestant online. Do we have a contestant online?
Yes.
And who are you, sir?
Bill.
Where are you from, Bill?
Falls Church, Virginia.
Falls Church, Virginia. It's a place that we call Nova.
Yes.
And, of course, Doug down here in Charlottesville or at Montpelier refers to this area as?
Rova, rest of Virginia.
Tremendous. Well, we're very happy to have you with us, Bill. And Doug, what do you got?
Well, you know, this is great. Since Bill is coming from the Falls Church, I thought I'd ask a churchy question.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Bill, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Benjamin Franklin made a suggestion at the Constitutional Convention that the sessions be opened with prayer. The delegates refused to accept the motion. Why? Was it A, because of issues of church and state? B, there was no money to hire a chaplain? C, differing religious views, sectarianism?
Mm-hmm.
Or D, the politicians in the room consider themselves ungodly?
Oh, man. I'm trying to keep these ones straight. Could you do it again, please?
I will.
Not just for Bill, but for me. I'm trying to keep these straight.
Benjamin Franklin made the suggestion that the Constitutional Convention open daily with prayer. That suggestion was refused. The motion was refused. Was it A, because of reasons of church and state? B, there was no money to hire a chaplain? C, differing religious views among the delegates? Or D, the politicians in the room considered themselves ungodly?
Okay, Bill, I've stalled him long enough. That's a tough one, but I'm going to leave it up to you now.
Okay, well, I'm really not sure. I'm going to kind of take a stab and say C, differing views.
Differing views on various religions, so sectarian. You mean they didn't think they could agree on a person to do the prayers?
Right, and nobody wants somebody else's religion. That's a trouble when you favor a religion, is you end up in the position where you might be favoring somebody else's religion.
Yeah, well, that's certainly...
And a lot of people don't want that.
It's a reasonable concern, but what about the other answer choices, too? I'm not trying to give you a hint. I'm just trying to run through them. The first one was what?
Because of clear church and state issues.
Okay, that's sort of the same thing.
Church and state.
Yeah. A and C are sort of the same, aren't they?
Well, C, I think what Bill is saying is C is the delegates themselves actually didn't recognize the sectarianism of the others.
Oh, okay, so they couldn't agree on something.
Yeah, I think Bill got that pretty quickly.
Okay. Sorry. But church and state issues, of course, often are wound up in that. If you can't all agree on something, that's why we keep church and state separate. But you like the sectarian choice C better than A. What about B? What was that one?
B was there was no money to hire a chaplain.
What about that? That sounds like a perfectly reasonable reason.
That was my second choice. So,
but they just didn't have any cash, okay?
And then the last one, D, was the politicians in the room considered themselves ungodly.
What about that one, Bill?
A few probably did, but as a group, I don't think so.
All right. Well, how did Bill do, Doug?
Well, you know, he should have gone with his second choice.
They just didn't have the cash.
They didn't have the cash, which is kind of funny. You would have thought that someone would pull out a couple of bucks.
You would have thought, or you would have thought somebody would have volunteered.
Yeah, but here we are at the Constitutional Convention. The country generally really has a money problem.
It does.
That's one of the things driving the convention in the first place, is this taxing authority and how it is that the government was going to pay for things. And so that tension itself made its way all the way down to even whether they were going to open the sessions in prayer or not. Nobody wanted to fork up the money for the chaplain.
Yeah, a lot of the conventioners were strapped themselves. They weren't getting paid for being there. Most of them, in fact, I think, showed up at their own expense. That's why a lot of them had to come and go. Notably, Alexander Hamilton was absent a lot because he had to go make money. So these are a bunch of broke guys sitting around creating a new country.
Yeah, but you know, I really like Bill's answer because he's exactly right. In that hall at the Constitutional Convention, you had people of so many different ideologies and faiths, or lack of faiths.
Right.
And we sometimes forget that.
We do. Yeah, what's notable, of course, well, we could go and talk about this forever, but I'll pick one thing out about this. What always surprises me about this story is that it was Ben Franklin who suggested it, because you don't typically think of him as being particularly religious. But Franklin was really sort of suggesting that as a way to bring people together to, as they say, solemnize the event, and get people all calmed down and feeling in a cooperative spirit. Franklin was actually very much a supporter of all religions and gave very generously to all the churches and temples and mosques in Philadelphia, even though he himself never really committed himself to any one particular religious belief. So this really is understandable that Franklin would have done this.
Often we get people that come to Montpelier and they'll ask, what religion James Madison was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fascinating because you'll go through the house and you'll see a stone bust of Bishop John Carroll, the first Catholic bishop for the United States. And you'll see Confucius, you know, and then you see these kind of classic Greek influences, and you'll see Supper to Emmaus, which is very Christocentric. And the reality is that all of these attendees to the Constitutional Convention were extremely well-read, not just in politics and in structure, but also in theology.
Mm-hmm.
Madison himself, one of the reasons he goes to Princeton to study under Witherspoon isn't just Scottish Enlightenment, but it's also so he can learn Greek and Hebrew. It's one of the seven languages that he knew.
Right.
So these are very scholarly people.
Very hard to pin them down.
Yeah, but as you say, also evidently very cheap.
Well, Bill, I'm sorry you didn't get the answer right, but that doesn't matter because, of course, we've all learned something today, and you can learn even more when we send you a pocket constitution from James Madison's Montpelier. So please send us an email at ywc@montpelier.org, and we will send one in the mail to you.
All right.
Well, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And thank you, Doug.
You bet. Hey, it's the Constitution. I read it for the articles.
Woe unto thee, O Israel! You have sinned a great sin in the sight of God. You are not worthy to receive these Ten Commandments.
You, Moses. You take too much upon yourself. We will not live by your commandments. We're free.
There is no freedom without the law.
Whose law, Moses? Yours? Did you carve those tablets to become a prince over us?
Who is on the Lord's side? Let him come to me.
Listening to your weekly constitutional, I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with a retired airline pilot. His name is Ralph Stewart, and Ralph found himself in nearby Johnson County, Tennessee, at the middle of a controversy that involved the Ten Commandments and the local courthouse. Before the break, Ralph was telling me how he got into this mess, and it turns out he was doing something very dangerous. He was not only flying an airplane, but he was doing some deep thinking. Ralph, do you have any constitutional training?
No, sir.
So I get the impression, then, that you're flying around in your airliner thinking weighty thoughts.
Remember, that was retirement in 1998.
Okay. Oh, so you started thinking these things only after you retired, after you got out of your cockpit. This is pretty heavy stuff you're talking about here.
Well, when I was in my late 40s, a captain gave me a piece of advice. He said, Ralph, as you go through life, pay attention. You might learn something.
And good advice.
I got to thinking at some point. I always remember that advice. I didn't take it right away. But I got interested in in my late 40s, some questions came up about religions and other things like that. And so I decided I would go back and see if I could pick up a few things that I had missed. So I started studying. And I've always liked mechanics and how things work. So I started going back and backfilling some of the gaps in my understanding of how things work. I was interested in learning, and so that's why I kind of have been paying attention to things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite on the side of Darwin and evolution and things like that, and the evidence is so overwhelming that for the President of the United States to say, oh, let's teach the controversy, it actually irritated me I'd use a stronger word, but it was not a good thing that the President of the strongest nation in the world would be. Actually, I think he actually believes that, because it's one thing for just to pander to people, but I'm afraid that he actually does believe those type things. And I always got a kick out of those jokes about him having a library with books, because I don't think he read them too much.
So you were inspired by the Bush presidency and were irritated by the Bush presidency.
Because when I had mentioned some people in Johnson County, they had absolutely no concept that it might even have any suspicion of being inappropriate.
The Ten Commandments on the courthouse. In the courthouse, okay.
Yes, and the top line of it says, and these are the basis of our Constitution. That's how they justify the Ten Commandments being there.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I was pretty sure that was wrong, and it took a long time before, and I've read a lot of pros and cons about it, and I am guaranteeing you that they are not the basis of our Constitution. I probably can't recite them now in complete order, but the first two...
I think the first four, actually. I think they're all very religious.
Oh, thou shalt have no other God before me, mm-hmm. And no graven images. Mm-hmm. And in one of the Bibles that I read one time, it gives the reason. And it's because I'm a jealous God. And I remember thinking, jealous? What has he got to be jealous of? That is, I have dogs that are jealous. Why would they, such an omni, all those omnis, have anything to be jealous of? And also, there are, you know, thousands of pages written about this particular subject. But the basis is that the power of a government like ours, or is set up to say, comes from the people. We have to do that. I mean, it has to come from the people. But everything in that Judeo, those things, it's coming from the top. So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to say that these are from Christian belief. It just doesn't fit. It's a non-starter, as far as I understand. Mm-hmm. So I then started looking around on the internet for subject, and I got some advice. Said, well, Americans United, do these type of things.
The Americans United for Separation of Church and State?
Or AU.
Is yeah, the, AU, Americans United, right.
That they work on these type of things. Mm-hmm. So I sent them an email, and I sent them a picture of the Ten Commandments. I had taken it several years earlier in the courthouse and sent it to them. And then that's when the process started.
Okay, so this is in the early 2000s then? Say around 2003 or 4 or later?
Oh, it had to be later than that. Probably 2 years before the court.
Maybe around 07 or so.
Somewhere
late in the second Bush presidency.
Yeah, okay. Somewhere along that line. I had that picture, and I sent that to them, and then they responded, and they asked some questions. And one of the questions was, are there other displays in the courthouse and whatnot? So I then went to the courthouse, and I had my camera with me, and I took some pictures of the courthouse and of the different things that are up there. What you're trying to establish is how do they treat this any different from anything else? So I did take some pictures at the courthouse. And then I sent them off to Americans United. And then after a while, Americans United sent a letter to the county, the mayor and the county commissioners, saying that this was in violation. Well, the local paper, within, I think, 3 days, they knew who it was because they went to the courthouse and they, from anonymous sources, they said Ralph Stewart was seen there taking pictures. And so there was never any possibility.
So these guys knew you at the county commission and they'd seen you taking pictures.
In the courthouse, one, I walked into the mayor's office and asked the secretary a question or two, and I had some business there before, so it wasn't difficult to, he was here, he had a camera, and why would he be doing that? Why would anybody be taking pictures in the courthouse except to take away our Ten Commandments? So that sort of started, and within a few days, I got a few telephone calls as such, but nothing overly serious.
A few telephone calls saying what?
I wish you wouldn't do that.
Who was calling you? Do you know? Were they anonymous, or did they identify themselves?
Well, the first one of a conversation that I can sort of put significance on is, at that time, a county commissioner was also a neighbor that owned the land next to ours, and we actually have to have right-of-way across his land. And so, we have a little road there, and it's right-of-way. But he came to visit. This story goes a little bit further, even background, because once another neighbor had complained about the conditions along the lane here to T. Snyder, how messy it was, and the commissioner had heard about that, and he wanted to talk to my neighbor about complaining about the road, so he came up there, but my neighbor was not there, so he spoke to me, and he said, we really wish you wouldn't come into the county because you like it and then want to make changes, and, we sort of talked a little bit. But then he did say that, I can put living conditions anywhere I want to on my property, and I will rent it out to whoever I want, and it will be right there in your view. So this is, I told him at
so
that
time. So he was threatening to rent?
No.
Okay, please.
I said to him, this sounds like a threat. And he says, oh, no, these are just things that I can do. Johnson County has no building codes. So you can do a lot of things that other places would probably frown upon. So you could put a trailer, you know, right up against the edge of your property if you thought it, if you wanted to. But that happens quite a few years before where we are now in this story. So this same person shows up, and I talk to him in our driveway. And he mentioned that this is one of the things that I can do. And I and he said right away that, oh, this, and by the way, this is not a threat. This is just something I can do. And I kind of chuckling to myself thinking, well, it sure sounds like a threat. It's something that you, and at this time, and I do remember this for sure, he said, I will rent it to Mexicans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's, you know, this is a farm community around there, and they sometimes you have laborers that come in for the season.
So he was just assuming that you were a racist who would particularly object to Mexicans as opposed to somebody else.
I would not go so far as all I'm saying is that's the term that he used.
Okay.
And then he also said that he could go to the sheriff's office, be deputized. And when my wife used an ATV to go down T. Snyder Lane, which is a very small lane, to get the mail. We're 0.7 miles away from the mailbox. With an ATV, he could arrest her for driving an ATV on a county road. And, of course, his family members used it with the same thing we do and whatnot. But when I told her that, I was almost laughing. You know, it's laughable in my mind. But it did bother her that he would think that he could do that or would do that. So that was the one person who I had a conversation with, and then we parted company at that point. Nothing happened after that. The next telephone call that I got that is of interest to me was from Mr. Scott Teague. I had no idea who Scott Teague was. And after the conversation, I didn't know exactly what to say. He was obviously very religious in his beliefs and whatnot, and explaining to, and he used the term "my people." I was curious about that, so I did ask someone that I knew, "Who is this gentleman?" And she said, "Oh, he wants to be mayor." And I thought, "Oh, okay." He was a newcomer to Johnson County. He was a funeral director. And he had joined almost every civic union that you could. You know, he was very much a people person. So he later, after the conversation with me, you know, there was no threats or anything.
What did he say in the conversation?
It was just, you know, why would you object to the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. you know, type of thing. And there was not a lot of no argumentative or very friendly type of thing. But later, as they say, he formed the Ten Commandment Warriors as an organization.
The Ten Commandment Warriors.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And they collected money, and they bought Ten Commandment signs, and they gave them out. We had 23 Ten Commandment signs on T. Snyder Lane at one time.
Well, these are just the sort you just push in the ground?
Yeah. In some ways, it's humorous. But again, one of the nice things about, as I mentioned, the property is we have access across private land. Mm-hmm. So when the lane pavement stops, it's now a gravel road going up our up the hill. That's on somebody else's lane. And we also have a, when it comes off of that property onto ours, we have a fence there. And people don't normally just don't walk up there. It's not some place that you, it's not a house by the side of the road by any stretch of the mm-hmm. imagination.
Are you at the end of the lane?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the lane stops, and then we have access across the cow pasture.
So you don't have a lot of people passing by.
It's impossible to pass.
Okay, got it.
I found out that when you have a lane, that in that this part of the world means that it does not go through.
Okay.
So there's a cattle guard, wooden cattle guard, and then the lane, and then we have a fence that keeps the cattle at that point from coming onto our property. So there's two properties.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with retired airline pilot Ralph Stewart But a great battle over the Ten Commandments with local politicians, local elected officials, local candidates, and all of the implications it had for his personal life. After the break, we'll finish our discussion with Ralph Stewart after we have our Madison Minute. Stick around. It's the Ten Commandments.
The need to protect American access to the Mississippi revealed to James Madison a vital connection between the effective conduct of foreign affairs and a stronger Union. American weakness invited foreign high-handedness. In 1784, Madison explained to Jefferson why he thought the renewed Spanish attempt to close the river to navigation was, quote, impolitic and perverse. She can, Madison asserted, no more finally stop the current of trade down the river than she can that of the river itself. Though justice and the general rights of mankind were often disregarded in international relations, he noted, it was no small advantage that these considerations were on the American side in the navigation dispute. Even the most corrupt councils, he believed, would be somewhat touched by the progress of philosophy and civilization. Should such considerations fail, Spanish national interest required her to permit free navigation. With a Madison Minute, I'm Jim Blaylock.
A federal judge has ordered county officials to remove a statue of the Ten Commandments from the county courthouse. As Whitney Ray tells us from our exclusive Capitol Bureau, officials have less than a month to find a new location for the commandments.
At the entrance of the Dixie County Courthouse, engraved in stone, are the Ten Commandments.
It's our religion. It's our Lord.
Darcy Patterson says the commandments belong at the courthouse, but a federal judge disagrees. The judge ruled last week the commandments had to go because they violated the separation of church and state laid out in the U.S. Constitution.
It has nothing to do with the courthouse. It's our God. It's our God.
The Ten Commandments goes on trial today in a Virginia court. The ACLU has filed suit against the Giles County School Board regarding a display that contains the Ten Commandments. It's the Foundations of American Law and Government display, and it has a number of frames, 11 frames total, and one of those frames is the Ten Commandments. It has an
explanatory. As residents sang God Bless America, officials in Grayson County returned the Ten Commandments to a wall of their county court.
This is a county of people that believe in God.
Monday's event was the latest stage in an 8-year legal battle pitting the county against two residents and the American Civil
Rights. Child, I have been taught that America and God went together.
The ACLU says it is not decided.
A Ten Commandments lawsuit heard last week by the U.S. Supreme Court inappropriately focuses on free speech rights rather than church-state separation. That's according to the Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
We're asking the court to be aware of the church-state implications of this case. It's been framed exclusively as a free speech claim, and we think that poses dangers for the Establishment Clause, which is the provision of the First
Tonight,
Amendment.
Tonight, the Ten Commandments made their debut at the Cox County Courthouse. A Tennessee court ruling made that possible.
These documents, they are a part of our heritage. They are a part of the formation of the United States, and they are a reminder to us as to how we should live our lives in order to make...
Dixie County residents are furious.
If they're going to take it down, we should all pick it.
Federal judge, he doesn't come down here every day and say this.
The court battle to remove the statue began in 2007 after
Us
the ACLU...
Christians want them up, and we just think it's basic morals.
It almost broke out into a physical fight because someone had called someone else an atheist.
Ten Commandments back! You ain't taking my Ten Commandments! You ain't taking my Bible! And you ain't touching my faith!
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Ralph Stewart, who found himself recently embroiled in a controversy involving the Ten Commandments and the Johnson County Courthouse in Johnson County, Tennessee. These cases are very emotional, and lots of people tend to get involved. And Ralph found himself not only opposed by his litigation opponents, but by a local group called the Ten Commandment Warriors.
So the Ten Commandment Warriors, had Mr. Scott Teague not force the issue, I don't think that that we would have been left with the Ten Commandments, because he helped contact people that came up with the idea of a public forum that is the walls of the county courthouse. Mm-hmm. Now, in other areas, they have done this type of thing that they create a public forum, and then they can put the Ten Commandments in there. But if you do them outside like that, you're talking thousands of dollars to make these type things weatherproof and whatnot. So it's lucky that they did just stick to the interior of the building and make it on the walls.
The concept of a public forum is a concept in First Amendment law. And as I'm sure you know, through your own experience now, the government in a government building doesn't have to create a public forum. I mean, government buildings are for government business, and they don't have to allow anyone to put anything up on the walls. They don't have to decorate the walls themselves if they don't want to. But if the government does create an area and say this is a public forum, that means that the public can put up just about anything the public wants to, and the government doesn't have much ability to regulate that content. So is that what they were talking about?
Yes. That is the concept that they've used in different parts of the country to keep the Ten Commandments, say, on the lawn of the courthouse. They would, somebody would say, okay, we're going to make this an area, and you can put something up.
Means that if they make a public forum and then someone puts the Ten Commandments up, then somebody else can come up and put up
That's where the flying spaghetti monster comes in.
Flying spaghetti monster or the Temple of Satan or whatever group.
That is one going on right now, yes.
Yes.
Anybody can put it up. But by having it inside, it made putting something up a lot less expensive than having to put up a granite thing. I believe that the mayor and the county commissioners would have— because they did take them eventually down. They did come off the walls.
They did take the Ten Commandments down.
Oh, yes.
Down. Okay.
They took them down because they understood the legal cost. I think also insurance companies, their lawyer shows up sometime or other and says, this is going to cost you a lot of money. They all would have executive sessions which would not be open to the public, and you wouldn't necessarily hear those arguments. Mm-hmm. But in any case, they did take the Ten Commandments down, and they went, I guess, into storage somewhere. And then, through the efforts of Scott Teague, they got the idea of a public forum on the walls. Mm-hmm. He also did a Ten Commandments walk to D.C. He was going to talk to Congress, and he was going to talk to the president also, and explain to him all these things. And he did walk there, and I know he did see the representatives of some sort, but I don't know if it had much impact as such. But lo and behold, to sort of fast forward on Mr. Teague, when the next election round came up, he did run for mayor. And I am actually happy to say that out of all the candidates, he did not win.
But in the meantime, he'd gotten the county to agree that the walls of the inside of the Capitol were public forum. And so that Ten Commandments was back up, but now it was, his Ten Commandments?
Oh, no. So the public forum was created, and that's where they had a ceremony. And they,
that wasn't until later, till 2009, I think it was.
Yeah,
right?
When they posted those, that was the ceremony. They filmed it, and I think a state representative or two showed up. And
let me get the chronology so far. You showed up in 98. You noticed the Ten Commandments. You started asking questions. You started researching. You got Americans United involved. They wrote a letter. There were some unpleasant responses, but eventually the Ten Commandments came down.
Yes.
Then there was a hiatus of some period of time, say between 2007, 2009, and then the county votes to create this public forum on the interior walls of the courthouse, and then with great fanfare, I think it was in August of 2009, they repost them.
Yes.
Okay, and now they're being sponsored by the Warriors, is it? The Ten Commandment Warriors? Or
no, the Ten Commandment Warriors would probably not have been it had to be somebody that was a representative of the county, a member of the county anyway, whoever put those up. But it was the exact same plaque they added another one. So there's actually two up there. At the same time, there was a little brochure that you could pick up that was next to them, and it had an explanation from a religious leaders why the Ten Commandments are the basis of our Constitution. And I say I have read that one, and I have read counters and whatnot, but it just doesn't work because all authority comes from the top. I don't see the people at all in that. I have not learned all the good arguments, but that's the one to me that just stops it right there.
The preamble to our Declaration of Independence, which of course is not the Constitution, but is our birth certificate, if you will, says that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And then, of course, the Constitution itself makes no reference to the Ten Commandments, nor to Jesus Christ, nor to any deity at all. In fact, the only reference in the first seven articles is a prohibition of religious tests for national office.
Well, I have seen the argument that they date it in the year of our Lord, and therefore, that's sufficient.
Anno Domini, right, exactly.
That's sufficient evidence for some, not for me.
Look, I don't mean to take sides in this, but I've always, when people have pointed that out to me, I've always said if you really wanted to make a Christian nation, they could have done so very, very easily. It would have been quite easy to make that reference, and they did not. They chose not to, so I think Anno Domini is
just a sign of the times.
Yeah.
I don't think they would date
it's
it.
It's not
any
very
other
strong evidence, yeah. Okay? So I'll agree with you on that one. There's not a lot of evidence in the text of the Constitution. And then, of course, when you look at the Bill of Rights, the very first one is, of course, protecting religious freedom and specifically saying there shall be no establishment of a religion, an official religion.
Yeah.
So all the evidence actually goes the other way, goes your way.
Yeah. Well, from my limited view of history, I think there's ample reason to want to, for any sort of democracy, cannot have a particular religion because it just ruins it. I mean, look at the history of England, and then of course the colonies and on the problems there. And there's enough reason to that I think that they would have been saying, no, we do not want to have religion in the government.
It's funny you should say that too, Ralph, because I teach a First Amendment course. I taught one an interesting seminar over at Emory and Henry College in the fall of 13, and we actually looked at something. I think it was called the Book of Martyrs, and it's a series of woodcuts. And it depicts what happened to religious martyrs, that is, whoever's in the minority at a given time in England during the Reformation, when they were kind of going back and forth between Protestant and Catholic kings. And they were burning people alive. They were burning people alive.
I saw something the other day that made me think that, you know, going back to the Catholic Church's arguments with England about they wanted their clerics to have their own separate laws, and they actually collected money, and they were quite powerful as such. So, all right, back to where were we? The Ten Commandments came back up with a ceremony, and I saw the video of it.
It was August of 2009, okay.
Okay. I conferred with AU, and my idea was, okay, I will present my own displays to put up. And so working with them, and they rejected some of my verbiage.
AU did, or the
AU wouldn't go along with some of my verbiage because they felt they wanted you. Well, it just wasn't polite.
did you throw in some of that Marine jargon?
I might have had something about ancestry, but anyway.
Wow, I've never heard of Americans United rejecting.
They worked with something rather to come up with a plaque type thing, and then we agreed on it, and then they sent it to me, and you know, and then I took it to a printer, and made an appropriate size print of it, had it framed, and then I had to go before the county commissioners and ask permission to put that up. You know, I wanted to add to this forum, this display.
What was the gist of your message?
Ten Commandments are not the basis. I mean, one says specifically, and there's also the reference to, what was the thing about Tripoli?
Yeah, the treaty.
The treaty, where it started under George Washington and finished under John Adams, that, you know, we are not a Christian nation type of thing.
Right.
And so that was one, because no reason to put a lot of arguments up there. You're not going to sway anybody with these arguments. Just we're going to do it. So it was under my name, and I presented them, and I can't remember if I actually had to take them with me. I think we just gave them prints of the message.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they voted, and they said no.
Okay, wait a minute. They've established a public forum.
Yes.
They've allowed the Ten Commandments to go up. with an explanation that they are the basis of American constitutional law.
Yes.
But then when you came in with your documents framed appropriately, you say, of the appropriate size, they said, no, they're not going to let you point out that that's
They didn't
not
go
true.
Into detail. They all voted no.
Without explanation.
One of the things nice about county commissioners is they just vote. They can say yes or no, and they don't have to give a reason. But I remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she was on a TV show or something or other, and she mentioned that. She says, we can't just vote yay or nay. We have to have reason. And I thought, oh, that is so nice. You know, you can't just be one way. You're going to have to at least come up with some sort of reason why you are this way. But they said no without any explanation.
And all of them unanimously.
I'm pretty sure. I can't. I couldn't remember. They might not have even recorded the vote. Therefore, I went back with that message to AU, and then that was when they would start real legal proceedings at that point in time.
And that's a key point. Again, you've got to have you've got to have someone with standing, and then you have to have an injury. And your injury came up when you went up and asked to have your posters put up on the wall, and they denied that request.
Oh, yeah.
Now you've got a dispute. Now you've got damages. Now you've got, you can allege that your First Amendment rights have been denied. And now you've got a lawsuit. Okay, go on, please.
Lawsuits are slow, and it took a while. And so there was nothing mentioned about things for a long time. When the legal stuff started coming in, then the county commissioners would have to have executive sessions. So if there's something came up about it, they would have an executive session. They would all go in the back, and then lawyers would talk, and they'd come out, and the meetings would go on. You don't know what's going on. Eventually, in fact, I was there the night that they did it, but they had gone into an executive session, and I left because it was getting kind of, you know, I didn't think anything would happen. Turns out that when they came back out, they voted to approve the display.
Too bad you left.
No, I would have been leaving at the same time as a lot of people that I would possibly not want to.
Oh, I see. That was not well received.
I never had anyone say anything personally bad to me, but I also... Like when they had the prayer meeting where they had 400 people holding hands around the courthouse, that's some event that I chose not to go there, you know, just in case there was something wrong. But they eventually did vote to do it. What was happening was the lawyers were talking back and forth. And I think it was the county insurance company lawyers that said, cut your loss, you know, somebody, we're not privy to it. Then after that, I was allowed to put them up, and it took me a little while to get them up on the wall. I asked a friend that was very handy to if he would help me do it because we had to drill into a concrete wall, and I didn't want to make a mistake. He said, "I agree with you, but I can't do that because my wife is very active in the community."
And so he couldn't find somebody to drill a hole for you.
I couldn't. I did eventually, but this one, that was what he said. He did not, you know, he understands why it's the right thing, but his wife might have some friends that would not like that. That's a husband trying to understand what a wife is saying, and, you know, that is open to question sometimes. But anyway, he did not want to do it, and I found someone else that would do it. So we got them up, and there they stayed. Finally, they were up permanently, and the lawsuit was settled. I received a dollar compensation. I still have the check.
So you were in this for the money?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was never put in the paper that it had cost the county $75,000. You know, the newspapers report these things, but that was what they settled on for the legal fees to settle the case.
And that's our show. Thanks so very much to Ralph Stewart for coming in and speaking to us at the WETS studio about this fascinating and local controversy. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineers are Chad Barrett and Bob Hoffman. Our music is by the Watauga Fife and Drum Corps. Our Madison Minute is by the incomparable Jim Blaylock, who's never been involved in a Ten Commandments lawsuit, but still manages to offend everyone. My name is Stuart Harrison. Remember, you are a part of the American experiment.